I'm taking some deep breaths because I found out it's much scarier to sing for a group of people you've been hanging out with for a few days. Now, it just takes all that objectivity right away, and it's real scary. And so I thought, well, what are you most scared of? And I thought, well, maybe if I bend over, people will notice that I'm still wearing my long johns, so I just want to show you, so then I won't worry about it anymore. I only wear that at Holden. The themes this morning, the themes we have been talking about in the conference have been about the bent-over woman and all the ways that women are bent over, and so you're going to be hearing a lot about that in the concert. I'm a storyteller, very much as Kay and Michelle are as well, and that's been some of my favorite part of their presentations have been the stories they have told. So I'm going to be telling some of my own about women, some real, some imaginary, who've passed through my life. But one of them is very close to home. When I thought of the bent-over woman, this was my first song that came to mind. And I wrote this. This truly came out of life. I have two daughters who were here last July, didn't come this time. They're 9 and 12. They're a little older now and a little more self-sufficient. But a few years ago, well, I don't know that it's changed all that much. I think the kind of stuff they strew around the house has changed somewhat. Now it tends to be school books, school papers, old lunches, you know, and it dribbling across the floor on the way to the kitchen when they come in the house. And far too often it's Mom who's running around picking up after them. So it was on such an occasion as I stood and stared across the living room and things scattered about it. And of course, usually it happens and they manage to get everything in the middle of the living room floor, and you have company coming in 5 minutes, and they, of course, miraculously disappear as though the floor has opened up and swallowed them. And so there I stood, and this song came like a bolt out of heaven. Why do I spend my life caught in the storm and strife? Picking up pieces to put into boxes, papers and peanuts and soggy galoshes. Well, I've got better things to do than to pick up after you. I could sail far away for a year and a day in a boat of shimmering blue. To an island I know where the warm breezes blow, and I know just what I will do. I'll put up an umbrella on that glorious beach, right next to the no children sign. And I'll read three whole books from beginning to end, and more if I feel so inclined. Oh, why do I spend my life caught in this storm and strife? Picking up socks and a moldy old bear, finding 2 months' worth of old underwear. Well, I've got better things to do than to pick up after you. I could give of my talents to challenge the makers of war. I would march, I would sing. I would write 20 letters, and then, even better, I'd give all the generals a ring. And I'd talk to them nicely and ask them politely to give up their nuclear toys. And if they won't say that they'll put them away, well, it's time out for those ornery boys. Oh, why do I spend my life caught in this storm and strife? Picking up things that I can't recognize, covered with fungus and lazy fruit flies. Well, I've got better things to do than to pick up after you. I would start up a workshop for mothers who've not stood up straight since the youngest was born. We'll do role plays and cry, learn a mantra and sigh, born to stand, to repeat every morn. And then for the test we'll invite in a guest to drop socks in a heap on the floor. Any woman who sweats and then trembles and heads for the socks must repeat the whole course. Oh, why do I spend my life caught in this storm and strife? Screaming and bribing and pleading my lot, but will you pick up? No, you will not. Well, I've got better things to do than to pick up after you. Oh, the things that weigh us down, as mothers particularly, I think that's one I think about a lot. And I love my daughters very much, and I also very much love to get away from them now and again. But when I do, I feel guilty, you know, because on the one hand, it's wonderful to get away and to drive down the drive. I mean, I do this a fair amount because I tour as a musician, and I drive off down the road, and I know that for the next couple of weeks, I don't have to brush anybody's tooth. You know, I can only brush my teeth, you know, and feed myself or get fed even better. Wonderful, liberating feeling. But at the same time, I have this feeling that, well, they're not really being taken care of properly because nobody can do it quite as well as I can, and I worry about that a lot. So I wrote this song one time when I was on tour and feeling a lot of that kind of ambivalence, and it hasn't changed. I'm feeling it while I'm up here. I'm sure a lot of you are feeling it too. Oh, the song came, too, from a little book. It's called Mama. It was written by a woman named Alta, who was a writer and struggling to raise two small daughters as a single parent, which I've also been. And in the book, she said, I'm a mother, I'm a writer. I wonder if I'll ever be able to really believe both those statements. I sit here in the stillness, and my thoughts are all of you. And I wonder, and I worry, so as mothers often do. Oh, dear ones, how I need it all these days to be alone. But comes the evening, here I am, reaching for the phone. And it seems that every pleasure has its cost. And what I try so hard to find is lost. Still I must seek these lonely times to find a part of me, and I'll be home, your mama's coming home. Sometimes when I write, sometimes when I try to write, so much keeps crowding in. And my life's a book with torn out pages scattered to the wind. I love you both so dearly, and I've never had regrets. But other voices beckon, I'm afraid that I'll forget. And it seems that every pleasure has its cost. And what I try so hard to find is lost. Still I must seek these lonely times to find a part of me, then I'll be home, your mama's coming home. Sometimes the life I lead begins to tear my heart in two, and the rage comes flooding out and shadows everything we do. And it's then I need your love, but I need most to be alone. To take some time, glass of wine, then mama's coming home. And it seems that every pleasure has its cost. And what I try so hard to find is lost. Still I must seek these lonely times to find a part of me, then I'll be home, your mama's coming home. Then I'll be home, your mama's coming home. Then I'll be home, your mama's coming home. Bent over women. I think of women in the Midwest, bent over sometimes by circumstances, by farm practices, as well as conditions that they have no control over. My husband is from Iowa, and I was asking him in the midst of the drought, I said, how do the men handle it? The men find it so hard to express their feelings. How would they handle it? And he said, well, they just get real quiet. And it gave me a strong image that I built this song around. It's called The Drought. There's a silence in the kitchen, and a silence in my soul. Guess I've never felt so lonely, and I've never felt so old. Tommy's sitting at the table, and he's looking at the bills. If this blessed heat don't get him, then a broken spirit will. This land's been in my family for over 60 years. I grew up on this place, then I raised my children here. My folks saw the Great Depression and survived it on a prayer. Now I know just how they felt to see the land so parched and bare. I went walking out this evening when the sun was hanging low. It used to feel so peaceful, I could hear the new corn grow. But the land was dead and silent, and the corn lay on the ground. Though I watered it with tears, you know it never made a sound. Now Tom and I are farmers, and this land has been our friend. We bought tight-fisted bankers when no money would they lend. And we'd work just like the devil, and we'd laugh when day was through. But now this house is silent, and I don't know what to do. Sometimes there's a whisper, and I can hear the wind come up. But it's a sound that holds no comfort, only dust to fill my cup. 'Cause the land is blowing far away, it's leaving this old place. And sometimes in my dreams I see the wind with Tommy's face. I went walking out this evening when the sun was hanging low. It used to feel so peaceful, I could hear the new corn grow. But the land was dead and silent, and the corn lay on the ground. Though I watered it with tears, you know it never made a sound. There's a silence in the kitchen, and a silence in my soul. I've written a lot of songs about the women who've come before, about the kind of work they've done, the kind of lives they've lived. And I think it's important to know, too, something about their dreams and about what may have happened to those dreams in their lifetimes. This next song grows out of a time when I was singing in a rock and roll band. That was quite a while ago. I think it was a previous incarnation. I'm not sure. While I was doing this, I was singing in taverns and bars and all kinds of places, and I was singing close to my hometown, which was Olympia, and my mother came to hear me. And as she listened, I was watching her, and she was watching me, and I felt such a bond with her. And at the break, I went down and talked to her, and she said, you know, when I was young, what I really wanted to be was a singer in a band. And I realized I was kind of living out a dream that she had had. So this song grew out of it. It's called Mama Wanted to Be a Rainbow Dancer.
Mama wanted to be a rainbow dancer, wanted to be a singer in a band. I remember brown eyes dreaming as she sang and rocked her babies gently down. Mama came to see me at the tavern, came to hear me singing with a band. Her eyes were full and shining, I could see the dream reflected in her eyes, in her eyes. Mama could have been a rainbow dancer, but a woman's dreams are hard to hold. So she raised up four strong children, and she placed the rainbow deep within my soul, in my soul. Now I sing songs about the rainbow, and it always ends at Mama's door. And I see a young girl dancing, and I hear her singing deep within my soul, in my soul. La 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 la. Mama wanted to be a rainbow dancer.
There's a poem I want to read you, if I can find it real quick. I'm trying all kinds of new stuff tonight, which means I have to hunt through books a little more than I like to do. And they may not all be perfect. Now, we've talked about that a lot today. You know, I really want to be perfect, and it may not be, but that's how it is. This was written by a Seattle poet, a woman named Pesha Gertler. Fine, fine poet. My daughter, the carpenter. In the old days, the Jewish mothers bragged of infant sons, the doctor here, the lawyer there. Today, in the era of post-Friedan, I brag of my daughter, the carpenter. She calls her boyfriend, the waiter, on the phone, boasts to him of new muscles in her arms. Mascara mornings expand as she climbs from mirrors to an X-brace, shimmies herself 30 feet in the air, where she balances on 6 inches of wood. Yesterday's dreams of slinky sandals and satin spiked today with a jargon of sawhorses, crowbar, and scaffold. A bronze smile as she heads out the door, and I try to forego my old post as lookout over bicycles, fences, and bumps. That wild impulse to wrap her in gauze as I watch her climbing into a sky she's claiming for her own. I always like that as an introduction to this next song, because I'll tell you something else about my mother. You already know that she wanted to be in a band. During World War II, she worked as a Rosie the Riveter. And these were the women, most of you know, who took over the jobs. This was during World War I and World War II. Took over the jobs the men had traditionally done, and found that they could do that kind of work. And in many instances earn those kind of wages. And Mom was one. She worked as a mechanic on a truck at what was then Camp Lewis in Tacoma. And there's quite the story of the Rosies is that even though many of these women did find they could do this kind of work. At the end of the war, at the end of World War I, they were dutifully, you know, they were told to go back home, and they dutifully did that. At the end of World War II, far fewer did that, even though there was a tremendous propaganda campaign to convince the women to go back to their homes. Many did not. There's a story when I was working with the Washington Women's Heritage Project a few years back. I ran across an oral interview with a woman who had worked as a Rosie at Boeing, in fact. And she briefly had this to say about her life. The day the war ended, every woman in there got it. Lead man came around and said, "Frances, you can hang up your torch. The war is over. The boys are coming home. You can go home now." So I picked up a scrap of metal, and I carved my initial in it. This was in 1945, and this was to be my proof for my children and my great-grandchildren that I really was a burner in the wartime. I don't know anything more about this particular woman's story, so I made one up, and I call it Rosie the Riveter Revisited. My strong right arm built the ship that sailed to war. My strong right arm built the ship, and what was that all for? In 1941, the war had just begun. Jim was so young, but soon was off to hold a gun. I was 19, our child was only 3, when the paper said the shipyards needed me. I moved to Bremerton in 1942. I learned to weld. I was the best one on our crew. The work was hard. The heat would burn my lungs all day. But when the paycheck came, we girls would feel okay. In 1943, in August, 8 a.m., I'd not been sleeping well. My mind was filled with Jim. There was a knock. A man in uniform stood there. He said my Jim was dead. I hadn't seen him in 2 years. In 1945, the war came to an end. And on that very day, the big boss, he came in. He smiled and said, "My girls, the boys are coming home. You've earned a rest, go home. Your work here now is done." Picked up a scrap of metal, and I carved my name full bore. So my child would know I was a welder in the war. No place to go, I was a widow with a child. So I waitressed and I cooked and I married in a while. Sometimes I see that scrap with my name carved in so deep, and I recall the day the boss told me to leave, how I felt like some old rag they tossed aside, as useless as my patriotic pride. My strong right arm built the ship that sailed to war. My strong right arm built the ship, and what was that all for? Bellingham has played a fairly substantial role in the flood of immigrants who have come through this country on the way into Canada because they were not made to feel very welcome in this country, those from Central America whose politics happen not to be acceptable. So we've hosted a number of Central American families and have become very close to the struggles and the stories that we've heard from many of the people there. One expression of the women of Chile, of their political circumstances, or perhaps some of the finest political art coming out of Chile, are in the form of something called arpilleras. And these are pictures made of fabric and pieces of cloth and wool and cotton, and they're put together with little doll-like figures. You may see these actually in folk stores and different import stores, but they're probably not the real thing. They're probably the ones from Peru who just have these friendly little village scenes. But if you look at the ones from Chile that come through, particularly through the Catholic Church, and I'm not sure what other ways they're being marketed, I, I have one that was put out by a group of women who are in prison in Chile and are doing this as a fundraising effort. These little pictures have a difference because they are showing what life is like in their village. In the two that I have, in one of them, you see these little doll-like creatures carrying bags, and then you see them digging in dumpsters for their food. And in another one, you see women lined along the road in little cars going along, and they're all holding signs with question marks. These are the mothers of the disappeared. And then there's a little man passing out leaflets. And these women have been doing it, and I don't quite understand how they've been getting away with it, because they've been gathering. It started out with the mothers of the disappeared, and they gathered as a fundraising effort, and they go out through the church, and I'm not sure why the government hasn't stopped them, but they haven't, and I consider these very courageous women.
Church hall they gather, these women of Chile, with bright colored pieces of cloth from the factory, and they talk and they laugh as their fingers move quickly, piecing together these pictures of life. And they sometimes share stories, these women of Chile, of children and husbands who died much too early, and the tears and the anger are woven in deeply in pictures they sell for the bread of their lives. Our pieras, fingers move quickly with bright wool and fabric to sell to the church for a small pot of beans. Our pieras, creating a message for those who will see it, providing a witness to all they have seen. Our pieras, our pieras. They gather for courage, these brave patchwork makers, defying the junta with brightly stitched pictures of villages, children, and casual murders, telling the stories of lives filled with fear. And I sit in my room, I, a woman of privilege, and stare at the pictures of a faraway village, and the questions begin, and the tears and the rage, and my heart beats with women whose lives touch my own. Our pieras, fingers move quickly with bright wool and fabric to sell to the church for a small pot of beans. Our pieras, creating a message to those who will see it, providing a witness to all they have seen. Our pieras, our pieras.
Nadine, are you here? There we go. This past year, I've spent a lot of time traveling the state of Washington, working as the Washington resident songwriter for the Washington Centennial Commission. It's been a wonderful project. And for this project, in addition to singing a lot of the songs that have already been collected about Washington State, that was compiled, put in a book that I compiled called Washington Songs and Lore. In addition to that, I was to write 18 new songs this year about Washington, which has been a real challenge. I don't usually write that fast. and I've finished 15. I have three more to go before November 11th, so the heat's on, but it's all right. But this is one of them that I wrote for that seemed to also fit our theme, and I talked Nadine into singing with me. And it came out of some remembrances that I read by women of the Klickitat tribe who talked about basket weaving in their tribe and how basket designs had been passed down from mother to daughter, and I had not realized that that was true, that basket designs were passed on. Which was, of course, is also true of quilt patterns, which are passed down within families. So I created a song that would use both those voices.
Sally, she was only six then. Our tribe's own designs, such as salmon gill, trail of eel, flowers for women and deer for the men.
My grandmother's hands worked with bright colored fabric, taken from dresses I wore long ago. The strong cotton thread and the finest of needles, weaving my memory in patterns she'd sew. My great grandma Eleanor passed on knowledge to her daughter Susan when she was just nine. Lone Star Log Cabin, the sweet rose of Sharon, basket medallion, her favorite design.
Salmon gill, trail of eel, flowers and deer, bring in the lives of our ancestors near. Lone Star
fun to draw on all the wonderful talent that's here. And are the children here?
Children here?
Are they here that worked on this song with me? Come on down. While they're coming down, I'll tell you about it. This is another one that I wrote for the project, only I really can't claim having written the whole thing because my daughters helped write it. Jennifer and Kristen, some of you met last summer. They're 9 and 12, and they got to come with me before. And the reason this song fits as a Washington song is that one of our early foremothers, our founding foremothers, came to Seattle, and one of the first people in Seattle. She was married to Doc Maynard. Her name was Catherine Maynard. And she was helping him with his medicinal practice. Legend has it, I have to say, that so much of folklore, who knows, but it's a good story anyway. But legend has it that she needed particular herbs for the garden, curative herbs, and to help Doc in his practice. And so she imported one particular flower, for which we are forever grateful. But it is a much maligned little flower. And we felt we needed to give it its due. So, this is it.
Let's just do it first.
Okay. So I have recruited these two.
Yeah.
to salad greens or dandelion tea. That's why dandelions are for me. Dandy, 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 dandelion. Something pretty dandy about you. Dandy, 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 dandelion. Wish that there were more of you. Wish that there were more of you.
Education Sunday, and to bring any peace songs I knew for kids, and I couldn't really think of any offhand. And peace is such a difficult word. It's kind of like love. It gets thrown about, and pretty soon it loses its meaning, and nobody knows what you're talking about. And you have people in airports talking about peace through strength. What does this mean? So I wrote a song for kids to try and explain some of my ideas about what peace is. Now, if you catch on to how the song goes, you're welcome to sing along also. There are parts that are very repetitious. You'll catch. One more, then we'll take a break for about 15 minutes and come back again. But before I do, I just wrote this poem this afternoon. So this is definitely an experiment, but I had to try it out on you anyway, because you all know where it came from. No, not all of you know, all the women at the seminar this morning. Kay told such a good story that I wanted to share it with the community, and so I put it sort of in my own form. And I've probably really twisted up the story. I mean, when you hear a story once and then try and repeat it back. And Kay and Michelle were going to give me all kinds of more information about this, but I didn't wait. I wrote it anyway. Okay, the poem is called That's What You Get. There was an old woman who lived in the Heights. She was 80 years old. She was wealthy and bright. She owned a fine Cadillac. She liked to drive to her local grocery each evening at 5. But the city of Boston has too many cars, and one day she'd circled the block for an hour when finally a car pulled out, leaving a spot, and she angled and started to back the car up. When out of the mirror, she saw a red flash, and a little sports car with a screech and a dash flew into the spot she was going to back in. And a young man got out, and he was wearing a grin. He said, "That's what you get when you're young and you're quick." Then he smirked and he waved. He was feeling quite slick. But his smile kind of froze, and he started to run, as the woman smiled too, then gave the caddy the gun, and she rammed that red sports car right into a ditch and said, "That's what you get when you're old and you're rich."